are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, June 30th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On today's program, the Supreme Court unleashes a reactionary agenda on the country, social and economic reaction, hitting public sector unions, women's health. We're going to be breaking it all down with Ian Meilheiser of Think Progress and Katie Klobusik, writer and activist. Also on the program,
a wonderfully great, amazing fairy tale-like story about a certain company the United States has given millions and billions of dollars to. So, you know, take care of the... I think back in the day they would call them something like mercenaries, but I guess today we call them contractors.
Contractors.
Yes. What they had to say when they heard the government was doing a little bit of an inquiry into their practices. It's an interesting little tale, if you will, and we'll get into that. It's certainly disturbing and shocking, and maybe not shocking when she's
not in any way shocking, I don't think. And that's what makes it so disturbing.
Yes, there we go.
Also, Facebook experimenting on you without your permission. Again, not disturbing, not shocking because it's so expected, so all the more disturbing. Also, Rick Santorum, some more thoughts that link to blah people. ISIL declares a caliphate in Iraq and Syria as that crisis grinds on. Also
the story of a wonderful story about a company that required one of their teenage workers to wear a combination of numerous different horrific slurs as a name tag.
And Matt and I are starting to ask some questions about some of the treatment we received from Sam in the office. We're going to get to Ian Meilheiser in a second. But, folks, there's an amazing piece of news that came this past week out of Oklahoma. You may have missed it, but this is huge.
Huge.
Huge. There was a Republican primary last week that saw incumbent Congressman Frank Lucas being challenged by a fellow named Timothy Ray Murray. And Murray, well, let me just say really quickly something. And you can see what Murray lost. He got about 5% of the vote. But he had a very novel explanation as to why his loss was totally invalid. And the reason was because the real Frank Lucas, according to Timothy Ray Murray, is dead. He was killed, and he ran against a body double.
Oh, that always happens.
I don't understand why he didn't bring it up during the campaign. It was almost like, you know what, dude? I didn't want to play dirty, all right? I wanted to run an honorable campaign, not mention the fact that you had a body double and really dead, but you pulled off a fraud on me, and now I'm coming out with the truth. Timothy Ray Murray said, this quote, from his amazing campaign website, and I'd like to thank the great Charlie Pierce for drawing our attention to this. I, Timothy Ray Murray, am a human born in Oklahoma and obtained and continue to fully meet the requirements to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives when honored to do so.
Wait, I have a question now.
Wait, just really quickly. I will never use a like or a lookalike to replace my office's message to you or anyone else, as both the other Republican challengers and Representative Frank Lucas have done.
I have a question. Could you just read that very first line of his comment again?
I, Timothy Ray Murray, am a human.
Okay, thank you. Now, he said that he was running against an imposter, a body double. But is he now saying, is he now pressing the charge that this body double is an alien, like an outer space alien, like a non-human, like some sort of humanoid from another planet?
That's possible. And the other thing that occurs to me is I feel like always in the movie, it's always the android alien body double type that says, I am a human.
So maybe it is the other way around.
Maybe Timothy Ray Murray doth protest too much. And it was not, because the letter goes on to say that Frank Lucas, the real Frank Lucas, was killed in Ukraine in 2011 by the World Court, obviously.
Oh.
Maybe it was the real Timothy Ray Murray that was killed by the World Court in Ukraine in 2011. Now, that said, while this may not work out for Timothy Ray Murray, he is in talks to have a show on Glenn Beck's network.
Are you serious?
And I'm sure he will be helping draft the next Republican platform. No, it's not true.
Oh.
But I wouldn't be surprised if it is true in a matter of seconds. That was a great story. All right, folks, we'll be right back with Ian Millhiser from Think Progress. We're going to break down the Harris Quinn decision, the Hobby Lobby a little bit. Really bad day. We're going to try to put it all in perspective. All right, we'll be right back.
As we enter, come now, we'll take it on the biggest adventure. Must be dementia that you ever thought you could touch our credentials. What's the initials? QB, Jamrock, the lyrical official. Send out the order, laws and the rituals. Burn candles, say prayers, paint heroes. It is truth, we big news, we hood heroes. For us to anchor, we cost no bunker. Man a bad man, we not play Willy Wonka. And I got the nerd, I got the guitar. And we can blaze it up on your block if you wanna. Or haze it up, stash spots in a Hummer. Or you can run up and get done up. Or get something that you want none of. Unlimited amount to collect from us, direct from us, street intellectuals. And I'm shrewd about decimals, and my man to speak patois, and I can speak rap star, y'all feel me, even if it's in Swahili, a body Ghani, Missouri Sana, switch up the language, I move to Ghana, salute and honor, real revolution rhymers, written piranhas, like two Obamas, unfold the drum, word is out, hysteria you heard about, Nas and Junior Khan, can it turn it out, body the verses till I scream murder out, the kings is back, time to return the crown, who won it, tuck your chain with dude coming, renegades and appeal. Get back like new hunters. Bet your Jews on it. You don't want to lose on it. Either move on or move on it.
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now, Ian Millhiser. He is the justice editor at Think Progress. Ian, thanks for joining us. How are you?
It's good to be here, although not the greatest day I've ever had right now.
Yes,
yeah, no,
of course, yes.
Clearly not a great day, but I guess, I mean, obviously a necessary day to kind of understand and put into context. We want to start with the Harris Quinn decision, and really this is a very significant decision, obviously, for public sector unions. And I think now, just as the decision is coming down, and maybe in the last couple of days, there was some heightened awareness about it. But you wrote a piece a while ago basically saying, this is maybe not the major decision of this cycle, because there are a number of very significant decisions, but this was the one that was sort of under the radar that was going to play, you know, pay very significant dividends kind of coming up, and now it's done. So why don't you situate this case for us, tell us what was at stake, and then we'll look at how the 5-4 right-wing majority went about basically handing a significant defeat to the public sector unions in this case.
Sure thing. So this was an effort basically to defund public sector unions. The way that unions are financed is if you belong to the union, you pay dues. And if you don't belong to the union is still required to bargain on your behalf. So any higher wages, any increased benefits that the non-members get, that the members of the union get, the non-members have to get them too. In return for these benefits, the non-members often have to pay what are known as agency fees, and that just reimburses the union for the cost of bargaining on their behalf, so they're not getting something for nothing. This case sought to say that the plaintiffs tried to get the court to say that in all cases dealing with public sector unions, those, they're called agency fees, these fees reimbursing the unions for the benefits they give to non-members, are unconstitutional. And the court didn't go quite that far, but they said that for the one of the most vulnerable sets of government workers, these fees are unconstitutional, and that's going to make it very hard for unions to operate because, you know, if people can get something for nothing, they're going to take something for nothing, and there's going to be little incentive for people to pay the unions for what they're providing these workers.
Right, which, of course, will fundamentally undermine the union's abilities to sustain themselves and do those organizing and negotiation efforts to begin with, which benefit those the workers who are essentially – I mean, it's a free rider problem. So, I mean, what would be the clearest analogies to draw? Because it seems on there's one very, very simplistic way that the right frames it, and that frame is the unions are just taking money out of your pockets. It's not democratic, and whether and regardless of your choice, they take the money, right? That's the frame, and that's kind of what the court sided with essentially in some respects, at least with regards to these workers, and we'll get into those distinctions later. But the much better and more appropriate way of thinking of it is you're dealing with, as you say, basically dealing with a free rider problem, which is that the union negotiates these benefits that impact and improve everybody's lives. And you need it. So is an analogy like paying a toll for road maintenance or, you know, something that is a public benefit that you're gaining from. And it's, you know, it's not entirely on the house. You have to pay something into it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You know, what the issue is here, these union non-members, members and non-members, the workers at issue in this case, were making $7 an hour before the union came along.
Right.
And once they unionized, they started making over $11 an hour, and thanks to the unionists, they have to get a raise in December, where their wages will go up to $13 an hour.
Right.
So their wages nearly doubled because of the union. You know, they will earn nearly twice as much as what they once earned because of the union. And the idea that it's some great imposition on someone who just had their wages nearly double, to have a small fraction of those increased wages taken out of their paycheck in order to reimburse the union that got it for them in the first place, it's a ridiculous assertion, and it's a very damaging assertion, you know, because ultimately what this does is it enables what you call free riders. It enables workers who want something for nothing to get all of these higher wages without having to pay for it, and ultimately the workers who will be burdened with those costs are going to be the responsible workers, the workers who join the union and say, I am getting something, and so I am going to pay my fair share to make sure that this sticks around for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic commons problem. I mean, you're taking advantage of a public good that's created, in this case, the higher wages by the union, and then not paying into it and not supporting and sustaining it in any way. I'm curious if we could go to the personality of this for a second, and then we'll get into more of the broader specifics of how the court actually made this distinctions and what they tried to do with it, how they attempted to maybe draw a slightly more narrow – I mean, they did draw a more narrow decision than they could have. But how – given the context that what the union did and what this legislation did in Illinois essentially, as far as I understand it, is it took workers – this woman, Mrs. Harris – basically was staying at home taking care of her son who had a rare degenerative disease. She was getting paid through Medicaid, and so the unions agitated and the governor, Quinn, signed a bill basically saying this woman is a state employee because Medicaid is basically paying her to do what she's doing. So therefore she's eligible to be represented by the union, not, you know, be forced to join incidentally or pay dues, but can be represented as far as I understand. And then she accrued these benefits, which we were just talking about, 7 to 11, and then 13 would have been next. What was the impetus for her personally? I mean, how was she enlisted on the, in this crusade? Which, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it will benefit her personally in some ways, but it's sort of, on the whole, it's extraordinarily bad for people like her, and maybe her too. I mean, I don't know what the end result for her is. Do you have any sense of? I'm always fascinated by how someone gets enlisted as a kind of guinea pig in a crusade like this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was the ostensible plaintiff. There were eight people who were these home health care workers who say they object to this arrangement. But the real plaintiff here is an anti-union litigation shop called the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, which, you know, goes all over the country looking for lawsuits it can file to try to undermine unions. Right. And they found a big one here, and they just scored a big victory. You know, what I think you have to understand about the context of this case, so what happened here is it used to be that people on Medicaid were frequently institutionalized, mm-hmm. and that's a bad place to be.
Right.
You know, you don't want to be in an institution if you can avoid it. And so we've seen a trend towards non-institutionalized home care, and that's a very good thing. But these home care workers tend to be very poorly paid. And if they're poorly paid, you know, you're not going to get a high quality of worker. It's going to mean that the quality of care is going to be very poor. And so in the process of trying to do this very good thing of moving people out of institutions, we can wind up having worse outcomes if we don't have, you know, good people who are well compensated because they are good people, providing care to what are often our elders.
Right.
If we don't have unions, these people will not be well compensated in many cases. And ultimately, the people who will pay the price will be the patients, typically very helpless, elderly patients who depend right. upon these workers and who deserve to have the best possible care workers they can get. And if you want good care workers, you have to pay them like they're good care workers.
Right, absolutely. I mean, this is the McDonald'sization of elderly care. I mean, that's the in addition to the anti-union push, that's the broader policy consequence that almost anybody who could be in a situation like this with elder care or something like that can feel, no question about it. So, what did the court actually do here? They could have gone farther, but they did go pretty far. What did they actually do? Break that down for us.
Sure. So what they could have done is they could have overruled many decades of precedent saying that in all public sector unions, so unions for cops, unions for firefighters, all of your government unions, these agency fees are allowed. They could have tossed out these agency fees entirely, and that would have threatened all public sector unions. I mean, that would have been an existential threat to many public sector unions. They didn't go quite that far. They said that for these unusual arrangements where you have workers who are paid by the state but work directly for an individual, which is what you have with these home health care unions, in those cases, the court said that these agency fee arrangements are not allowed. And then they had this ominous language where they said that agency fee provisions, this is the court's language, unquestionably impose a heavy burden on the First Amendment. So they're hinting that, you know, right now we're just taking this away. You know, we're just taking unions or undermining unions for these Medicaid and home health care workers. But tomorrow, cops, we may come for you.
Right.
Firefighters, we may come for you. That, you know, that's the upshot here, is that they are at least staying the execution of many of these public sector unions, but the next decision could have much broader implications.
Right, and then is that really the very, very dangerous trend that I know you've talked about and written about, and we've seen this in a number of different areas. Haley Sweetland Edwards was on this program a couple of months ago talking about basically perversions of the First Amendment to undermine, OSHA regulations, something as simple as posting a notice on basic workers' rights in a cafeteria of a corporation, as an example, or even more kind of darkly, hilariously, someone, you know, a Wall Street firm actually saying, well, you know, complying with an aspect of financial regulation violates our First Amendment rights because we don't want to exercise right. our speech, you know. So is this kind of, and I think the phrase is weaponizing the First Amendment, is this the way this kind of, and I think it, at this point it really is clear to call it this very far right judicial activism, is that the kind of holy, that is that the context provider for all of these assaults we're going to see? Is this, it's like once you establish
that seems to be where we're going. I mean, Justice Breyer pointed out in oral argument that this was an attempt to turn the First Amendment into a weapon that conservatives can wield to tear down walls that they don't like. And it's really turning the First Amendment on its head. You know, the purpose of our First Amendment is to ensure robust debate. It's to ensure that ideas aren't suppressed, so you and I can hear the different ideas that are out there, can hear the different proposals that people might have for what might make good policy. And then when we go to the polls, we can pull the lever and we can make an educated choice. The purpose of the First Amendment is so that we have the full field of policy choices laid out for them, and those choices aren't made for us in advance by the government stepping in and saying, no, you're not going to get to hear about this idea because we don't want you to choose that one. What the court did today is they said that the First Amendment mandates a particular anti-union policy. That is the opposite of what the First Amendment is supposed to do. The First Amendment is not supposed to take our choices away from us. The First Amendment is supposed to lay out the full menu of policy choices that are available so that we, the voters, get to make that choice and not nine unelected people who sit in a marble palace in Washington, D.C.
Well, right. And just, you know, to add really briefly to that, and then we'll get to Hobby Lobby. But I think it's also setting up these inversions. You know, if we go down this road where weaponizing the First Amendment and, I don't want to disclose this policy that we conduct as a financial institution, or I don't want to disclose, frankly, this chemical that we're putting, you know, by your water supply when we're doing drilling exploration or fracking or something like that. There's no inverse. I mean, you're not going to start being able to say, well, I don't want to give my credit score as part of this application for this credit, or I don't want to disclose this personal detail about myself. We're going to have this completely inverted world. We talk about, you know, with things like bailouts, socializing losses, privatizing gains. We're going to turn, you know, we're going to have a road where we have a sort of very high personal transparency and vulnerability in institutions, even as institutions get more and more insulated. And it just seems like as you say, astonishing, just kind of turning everything on its head. And the trend is, you know, not only ominous, just kind of, I guess, just sort of mind-blowingly cynical.
You know, there is no limit to what happens if the court is willing to fully weaponize the First Amendment right. in this way. I mean, the most ridiculous lawsuit I've seen, there's a lawsuit that was just filed challenging Seattle's minimum wage law. And the theory, I'm not making this up, the theory of this lawsuit is that the minimum wage violates the First Amendment right. because every dollar that is spent paying workers is a dollar that McDonald's can't use to buy advertisements. That's their theory, that the minimum wage suppresses their speech because they have to pay a fair wage to their workers, and that means they can't afford to buy more ads for the Big Mac. And this isn't some podunk attorney who filed this lawsuit. This is Paul Clement, right. Who's practically the Solicitor General of the Republican Party.
Yep.
So they are thinking big when they think about weaponizing the First Amendment. And, you know, like I said, the First Amendment is supposed to preserve our policy options and ensure that we know about all of them. It's not supposed to take them off the table for us.
Absolutely. So really briefly, in the other terrible decision that came down today, we've talked about the forces of economic and corporate reaction and reversal. The Hobby Lobby case is assault on women's health and social progress. You know, what what was the justification and explanation of that decision? What did they do there?
Sure. So it used to be, you know, until today, the rule was essentially that my religious liberty stops at your body. You know, I have robust rights to, you know, believe what I want to believe and to practice my faith, but I can't use my religious beliefs in order to step on your rights. And the Supreme Court today effectively threw that rule out. And they did it through a bit of a bait and switch. The court took a law that was passed, I think, in 1993, whose purpose was to keep in place a long-standing religious liberty regime that included this rule that my religious liberty stops at your body, and they rewrote it to say that now they're sweeping legal immunities for religious objectors, and that includes the right, apparently now, to impose your faith on another person through lawsuits. So this, you know, it's too soon to know what the full implications of this decision will be, but the implications could be broad and they could be quite frightening.
So it's really just astonishing to consider. I mean, we'll get into this more, but I mean, you know, is this a kind of backdoor argument for why we should have really just more publicly funded healthcare, essentially, to kind of take it out? I mean, is this the progressive response to the logic of this type of ruling?
Well, I mean, I said there was a bait and switch here, and you know, there's actually two kinds of bait and switch here. Not only are they rewriting the law, but, like, you know, we could have, when we started designing our healthcare system in this country, we could have had a single-payer system. You know, we could have passed a law in, you know, 1940 that did that, and we would have developed that way, and that would have been great.
Right.
But that's not what we chose. You know, we chose a different path. And we operated under a different system for, you know, nearly a century, for, you know, 70 or 80 years. And all of a sudden, 70 or 80 years into it, the Supreme Court is swooping in and saying, hey, guys, like, I know that you set this thing up thinking that there was one set of rules, but we're going to change the rules on you. And now when you do it this way, you know, one of these limits is that people with religious objections can swoop in and exempt themselves and exempt their workers from parts of the law that are meant to benefit their workers. So, you know, it's another kind of bait and switch where, yeah, you know, if America had known when we started to build our healthcare system, which, you know, really, you know, the modern American healthcare system started to be built out in the Roosevelt administration, we probably would have done it differently. But, you know, who would have seen 80 years from now the court would completely rewrite so many settled principles of law?
Well, the irony is that the liberals, it's the progressive forces in America are the ones who actually don't go for the big systemic kind of revolutionary rewrites. It's the right. And that's, I guess, one of the disturbing ironies of American politics, which we're paying a lot of prices for. But Ian Millhiser, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be well. All right, folks. We are going to take a 30-second switch. We're going to come right back with Katie Klobusek. She's a writer and activist, and she'll give us another view into this Hobby Lobby decision. We're going to keep breaking all this stuff down. We'll be right back. Just one thing away.
All right.
Welcome back. Michael Brooks.
Matt Binder here, and this is The Majority Report. And joining us now is writer and activist Katie Klobusek. You can find her online at Katie_speak on Twitter and katiespeak.com. Katie, thank you for joining us today. Hold on. Michael doesn't have up the Sam's computer.
Sorry. Go ahead.
All right. There we go. Hey, Katie.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. I wish I could say I'm doing better, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, you know, thanks for having Ian on before me because he's got all that legal expertise. I just have the righteous outrage and the uterus that is now the political stomping ground. I can't believe, I mean, what you said about the challenge to the minimum wage on First Amendment grounds that says every dollar McDonald's spends on its employees is a dollar it can't use on free speech. In that case, the Hobby Lobby decision reduces the First Amendment rights of their some 13,000 employees because they're going to have less money because they're going to be double billed for their prescriptions. It's going to be like going back to the pre-Affordable Care Act days for them.
Yes, yes. And so let's get down to this. Like you just mentioned, we had Ian Millhiser on before to talk about, you know, the legal aspects of the Hobby Lobby case, which effectively, you know, Hobby Lobby is this arts and crafts store that basically didn't want to cover women's contraception after the Obamacare mandate. And so they took it to court, and SCOTUS has ruled that they do not have to pay because of their religious beliefs for contraception. And this is enraging because it's certainly a war on women, and certainly a war specifically on poor women, women who cannot afford this contraception. They were receiving it as part of their health care before.
Yeah, it's enraging for everyone because basically we just went from corporations are people, which is bad enough, to corporations are religious people,
yes,
which now means no matter who you are, when you're interviewing for a job, you now have to interview your employer to find out their religious beliefs to see if
yes,
something of yours will be taken away based on that. And everybody knows that low income and communities of color are the ones most affected, like you said, because they're the ones who are least have the least bargaining power in an interview with their employer. It's not like a Hobby Lobby employee is able to discern, you know, whether or not that employer or the other employer or McDonald's or somebody else is gonna, you know, discriminate on them based on their religious beliefs.
Yeah. And let's be clear too, when we're talking about religious beliefs, we're talking about Christians, because, you know, if this was a case where this devout Muslim company, a Muslim owned company, wanted all the women to wear head coverings, and the women there had a problem with it. First of all, this fantastical case would have never even made it to the Supreme Court. And second of all, I highly doubt it would have ruled in their favor.
Yeah, there's no way. You'd have right-wingers running around screaming about Sharia law all over the
yes,
place
and
how
course,
you can't have Sharia law in a workplace. And you know, they're all invading and careful, it'll spread like a disease. I mean, it's just... And let's be clear, most likely, even if that case were to happen, which it wouldn't, that company would probably be a smaller, closer to a mom-and-pop actual store, like a corner store that's owned by a small family that has tight religious beliefs. Hobby Lobby, according to Forbes, has more than 20,000 employees and pulled in $3.3 billion in 2013. This is not a small
yeah,
store on the corner who's upset that their knitting needles are somehow going to be used for something, you know, insidious. This is a big company in the top 100 in Forbes.
Listen, if you are an arts and crafts person out there, I implore you to stop your Hobby Lobby shopping and do all your shopping at your local mom and pop stores. And if there is none there, then at least go to a Michael's, because as far as I know, until I find something bad about them, which I'm sure there will be something. But yeah, let's stop shopping at Hobby Lobby, arts and crafts people, knitters, all you people who do all that type of stuff.
There's another, like, several dozen other companies. We're calling it the Hobby Lobby case because it's got a nice hashtag and it's easy to say, and they were the lead plaintiff. But you'd be shocked. Like, go check out the Center for Reproductive Rights website and find the dozens of places that you're now angry at.
Mm-hmm. So I'm also glad you brought up the issue with, you know, the mom and pop businesses and just how big Hobby Lobby actually is, because in this ruling, Alito goes on to say that it's for, you know, closely held. That's his phrasing, closely held companies. And what this means, closely held, it's not, you know, Alito talking about how no one holds him at night and he's feeling lonely. It's you know, 50% of a company has to be owned by five or less people. That's a closely held company. You know, a company like Mars, for example, huge company, would fall under this definition.
Yes.
I mean, that's just unbelievable to me. Just... It's just, you know, just because they're a private company that didn't decide to, you know, sell these shares to a large group of people or go public or whatever, they could literally, these five or less people could employ hundreds of thousands of people, millions maybe, and they're still being considered a small, closely held company.
Well, it might be worse when you put it that way, right? So the beliefs of five people now override the beliefs of 13,000 people. I mean, what about my religious rights to not want to be pregnant? So, you know, when I had to pay out of pocket for my health insurance for a decade, my birth control wasn't covered before the Affordable Care Act because my prescription plan chose not to cover it. And when I lost three jobs in a year, I couldn't afford the $80 for the name brand birth control that was all that worked for me. And I ended up pregnant. And that's what happens. What happens when you limit people's access to contraception is more unwanted pregnancies and more abortions. So if Hobby Lobby, who says that they oppose this handful of birth control, it's not all birth control, by the way, it's a handful that they, despite all scientific evidence and all the expertise, they've decided that they think that this handful, IUDs and the morning after pill, are both abortive fashions. They think that they don't think they're contraception. They think that they cause abortion to happen, which is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
But because of that, like, it's, for me, as someone who has an IUD because it's what works best for me, suddenly my right to decide between my doctor and I what's best for my medical care is no longer applicable. Now it's up to my boss at Hobby Lobby should I decide to work there.
You know, it's really unbelievable. And I also want to bring up, you know, Hobby Lobby actually provided contraception previously as part of their health care plan. They actually provided women contraception if you worked there under the part of their benefits plan, and they never had a problem with it before. And then after the Obamacare mandate comes out, they still didn't know about it, and they still had a problem with it until all of a sudden, apparently, in 2010, someone at Hobby Lobby decided to read through this thing, and they said, hey, wait a minute. We're going to be forced to do this now? How dare you? You know, that's really what it comes down to. They didn't have a problem with this before. And on top of that, not even, you know, as a side note, completely as part of that, they actually, as part of, you know, their plans for, you know, pension, etc., for their employees,
yes,
they invest in the companies that make these contraceptives.
Yep, they do. And you know, this is typical, right? So as a corporate, you know, business owner, my business decisions are somehow my private business, but my employees' decisions on what they do with earned compensation, by the way, because of how we put together health insurance in this country, even with the Affordable Care Act, which is just insurance reform, it's not health care reform. I mean, I'm a walking, breathing, you know, advertisement for the Affordable Care Act, but I'm aware that it's just insurance reform. They're now saying that the five guys can do whatever they want with their investments, but when it comes to their employees, it's a totally different thing. I mean, it's ridiculous on its face, and it's not new. Remember when Huckabee was giving the whole Uncle Sugar speech?
Yes.
It turns out that when he was the governor of Arkansas, he presided over a prescription, a contraception mandate for the state of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So he had no problem with it when he realized it was just good health care. But now that the right has gone so far to the right that the only way to be, you know, a politician or a talking head or make your $1 million Fox News contract is to somehow go to the way right, suddenly he's against it too. So the same way Hobby Lobby used to not have a problem with it and suddenly does now that there's a liberal conspiracy to make it affordable and accessible, it's just what the right does now.
Yes.
I mean, it's really at the point where you wonder, you know, how far will this go? I mean, here you have the Supreme Court. I mean, they never really ruled like this before in terms of, you know, actually looking at the law and not being a conservative, liberal, partisan type deal. But, I mean, here they are at this point, not even paying attention to some of the things they previously ruled on. And they're just, you know, taking such specific things and they're tweaking it, twisting it to fit what their ideology is, even if it contradicts something they may have ruled on before. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's just unbelievable. And I want to bring up, you know, everyone listening to this is probably at the point where they're in a deep depression. So let's try to make everyone feel better as best as we could. I implore everyone, I'm still going through it, to go read Ginsburg had a 35-page dissent.
She
is angry about this. And I guess if you want to feel good that at least someone in the Supreme Court was fighting for the right thing, go read that.
Three different female justices wrote dissents. That's how angry they are. Yes. It's how much they get it.
But it should also be noted that only Sotomayor agreed completely, fully with Ginsburg's dissent. So, I mean, even then, I mean, it just shows you just how important, you know, it is to get some of these more, you know, the right people on the Supreme Court. You know, when people say, you know, voting for the president's not important, I mean, this, if it anything, this is the reason. I mean, the people who dissented from this is basically people who are of the liberal mind, many of them who Obama even appointed.
Yeah. I mean, we've got enough problems with the court. The last thing we need is a far-right Republican president in 2016 appointing the next two justices that retire. Like that,
exactly.
That's trouble. I mean, this, the only reason we were all sitting on pins and needles waiting for Lyle today to come back from the Supreme Court is because there was a chance it was a 5-4 split. Mm-hmm. And if we have a Republican president, you know, make the next two nominations, I mean, say goodbye to 5-4.
Oh, for sure. Yes. And also let's bring up the fact that in the ruling, I believe it was Kennedy, I'm not 100% sure on this, said that the government could pay for contraception when employees refuse. And I mean, to me, if you want to really pick and choose here, there's no doubt about it, this was a bad ruling and it's just bad news. But if we want to try to get nuggets of positivity just to make ourselves feel better out of this, I mean, things like this could just enforce the overwhelming opinion in this country to continue to fight for a public option, you know, single payer. And I mean, when rulings like this come down, yes, it hurts and it's bad. But I mean, if we want to look on the bright side of things, if more things go in this way, and things continue to get bad like this, then more and more people who maybe didn't pay attention before or who didn't have an opinion before on it, they will see that, you know, it doesn't work like this. We need a single payer. We need the public option. And if anything comes out of this like that, then it's – I mean, we just got to take it. Take what we can get out of it, you know?
For sure. And we have to understand that part of the reason that this is happening, we all know, everyone listening to this show knows the Supreme Court is political. We just know. I mean, even your libertarian listeners get that, right?
Yes.
And so the fact that the limitation on this decision is they tried to make a qualification that says it does not provide a shield for employers who might cloak illegal discrimination as a religious practice.
Yes.
So that means that's discriminating against me because I'm walking around with a uterus is just fine, apparently. I don't know if that's the Supreme Court saying, don't worry, we're misogynistic, but we're not racist. Like, I don't know what that is, but it should be concerning to everybody whether or not you use birth control, that seems to be the direction they're going. It opens the door to more of this. And
they also specify that this ruling only covers the mandate. For example, you know, if your religious beliefs don't believe in vaccinations, then you can't tell your employees that they can't get vaccinated. Come on. We just hate women. We're not conspiracy theorists.
Right. We're not out of our minds. We just really don't like women. And so just to drive it home, I mean, can you imagine – I mean, I'm a cis woman, and it's hard for me now to get more access to healthcare. Can you imagine a trans person sitting in that interview? How does that affect their access to care, which is already a problem? I mean, we're literally rulings like this take the most marginalized groups in our country and further marginalize them. I mean, Alito and Kennedy and Scalia never have to worry about any of their family members ever having access to care. That they just not a thing. I mean, even if we made everything illegal, their family would still have access because they have money. And so this is just another one of those 1% sitting on the courts in their, you know, glass marble house back there behind their 100-foot buffer zone that none of the rest of us get anymore. I mean, it's a little bit ridiculous. And it's like you said, I mean, even people who feel like they don't have a lot of power at the federal level when they vote, this is the reason. This is the reason you vote.
Oh, of course, yes. And also to go along with why the justices don't care, let's be honest, some of them are going to be dead by the time it really matters. So, I mean, I'm glad we had you on for this because I really, you know, people wanted the serious discussion that we had with Ian Millhiser, and then I'm sure there's people who just wanted to rage with you and I. So thank you so much. And before we let you go, though, last week you were on Ring of Fire show with Sam,
yeah.
And you were discussing the McCullen decision with the buffer zone. And for the listeners who don't listen to both shows, which you should, but I'm sure there's listeners who don't have the time for both. For our listeners here, though, I would really like for you to share, you know, your personal experience. You had stories about how you're one of the people who volunteer to help, basically safely get women to these clinics, where now apparently, since this Supreme Court ruling, there will be no laws allowed where they can't get yelled at in front of the clinics and be called murderers or be thrown at them or whatever. They can't be – it'll be cool for them to be harassed from now on. So if you could just share, you know, what your experience with that is.
Sure. The short explanation of McCullen, so far as we can discover it, is it challenged the 35-foot buffer zone in Massachusetts that was put in statewide after several people were murdered. Okay, so several people were murdered, and the state decided that they would limit free speech the way we've done since the founding of our country. We balanced public safety and free speech, and they asked protesters and picketers to stay 35 feet back from the doors of clinics in Massachusetts.
Mm.
The religious rights picked this really nice looking grandma lady who calls herself a sidewalk counselor. For those of you keeping track of conflicts on the court, Scalia's wife is a well-known registered sidewalk counselor.
I love the term sidewalk counselor too. Like if someone was like, you know, I'm throwing dust at them. I'm a voodoo doctor. Like that would work. But you know, sidewalk counselor sounds nice.
And people should understand that counseling happens inside the clinic. If you want a good depiction, I mean, go see the movie Obvious Child anyway, because it's hilarious from beginning to start. But they actually, the producer and the director worked with Planned Parenthood and actually used a Planned Parenthood script and a Planned Parenthood clinic for the appointment that the main character, Jenny Slate's character, has with her doctor about her unplanned pregnancy.
About this movie, yes.
They discussed options. That's happening inside the clinic. We don't need unlicensed counselors outside the clinic, even if they were there with goodwill. So in a country where we've had 300 individual acts of violence against clinics just from 2010 to 2012, the Supreme Court decided, based on no legal precedent, by the way, if you read Supreme Court Justice Roberts' decision, there's no legal precedent. They basically just say, we think she seems nice, and she should be able to go up to patients whenever she wants.
Mm-hmm. I assume, though, from your experience, though, you have seen differently.
Of course. And
yes.
I mean, the only the Massachusetts buffer zone is struck down. But what happens is that anyone that's written not specifically for a clinic is now up for a challenge. The buffer zone in Inglewood, New Jersey, that I helped get passed is now up for a challenge. Luckily, the city attorney is like, nope, sorry, we like it, and they're going to fight back. But in smaller communities or cities or towns or states that are already strapped for funding, you're going to see legal challenges all over the country. And I didn't hear of any clinics where it was worse than usual. I was in Queens on Saturday, and we had our normal like 15 to 20 picketers. In New York, by the way, that's safe boo New York, y'all.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm a Queens resident, and it shocks me that that's happening in Queens. I mean, if that's in Queens, Queens is literally the most diverse county in the country. And
yeah.
if that's and happening in Queens, I can only imagine what goes on and how far it goes in areas in the United States where it's not so, you know, liberal.
For sure. And for people should know, this is actually a situation where you have a lot of power locally. You don't even have to put on a vest and stand in front of a clinic to volunteer. If you know of a clinic in your city, and check it out, see if there is one. If it has picketers, you can call the police. You can call the police every time they're there and report the disturbance. Don't call 911, call the non-emergency number. But it's worked at several clinics across the country where just local people calling up and saying, oh, this is so annoying. Like, it has stopped the picketing. So that's really important for us to do ahead of buffer challenges, is for local police to have the understanding that communities support the clinic and they don't support the picketers. So check it out. See if there's something going on in your community. And if there is, report it.
Katie, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Katie Klobusek. You could find her at katiespeak.com or at Katie_speak on Twitter. And Katie, before we go, we have a treat for you. I know you enjoy this. We have Right Wing Mandela on the phone. And he has an opinion about what went down at the Supreme Court today. And while we won't agree with him, I'm sure we'll find, you know, some humor out of this.
I am quite disgusted to hear the liberal rantings and ravings of a young degenerate man and a woman who advocates for immorality and sexuality and otherwise. This is why our launching Tea Party Patriots Hobby Lobby Act 2016, and if you sign up today, you'll receive a free sample of an iodine tablet that will ban internally abortions, period. Give it to your daughter as part of a purity test, and she will never be able to access birth control or anything else. She will live morally, live cleanly, and we will save America from Obama, from Katie Klobusek, and from Matt Binder.
Thank you so much, Right Wing Mandela, and of course...
I am there, I am counseling. Don't kill the child, you whore! You like my counseling? This is good. Maybe I get a little carried away.
I think Right Wing Mandela has honestly, actually, perfectly demonstrated what
Let me counsel you. You are evil.
Yes, that's a perfect...
You should get the death penalty.
Perfect.
How do you feel counseled now, young lady?
I feel about as counseled as I usually do standing in front of a clinic. That's about right.
You are right.
Except they're not as funny as Right Wing Mandela, I'm sure. Katie.
We don't have a certain je ne sais quoi that I carry.
Katie.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Michael just won't stop. I'm trying to cut you off. I'm like, all right, buddy.
Shut up. I have commandeered the show.
Oh, man.
Go over there. Wait, slap your face.
What did you say to me? What did you tell me to do?
Hey, 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 hey,
hey,
shut up!
What did you tell me to do?
Go for it again.
Put it a little bit lower, actually.
Hey, 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 shut up!
We're going to let the track start?
Oh, you want it? All right.
Hey, 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 shut up! Hey, 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 shut up! Hey, 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 shut up!
That's all you can say at this point, folks.
Hey, 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 hey!
I know some people requesting that.
You know, when these cases come down, I literally am reading the decision, and I feel like just a wave of I can't explain it. It's just like, you know, you just feel so down all of a sudden.
It's revolting.
Like, ugh. It's like, you know, and you know, for some of these type of issues, I really, you know, I get joy out of going online and seeing the right wing reaction.
Not for this one.
Not for this one. This one's hard. really, it is though, because you know it's. Let's put it this way, too, though. When things like this happen, at least people on the left are funny, regardless. I mean, go to, like, Todd Starnes' Twitter account or friggin', like, Eric Erickson's Twitter account. And, you know, it is unbelievable. Win or lose, we're at least funny. I mean, we make everyone feel better. But
win or lose, they claim they're losing, and they're never funny.
Yes. Like, Todd Starnes is trying to make snarky comments, and it's just a dumbest things I've ever heard. I mean, and then you got Eric Erickson legitimately praying to God about this, like, on Twitter. It's just the weirdest things in the world.
Whatever. I mean, they all just, unbelievable. You know, that's disgusting.
I do love the whole, why doesn't everyone just buy their own insurance and everyone could just pay for their own health care? As if they don't get the concept of insurance as it is. I mean, insurance is literally everyone pays into a system, and whoever needs the health care gets it due to everyone paying into the system.
You preach to the choir, buddy.
Unbelievably.
Let's move.
We're going to go to the better half now.
Another fun half, folks.
We'll have some fun stories for you. Like how a government contractor threatened a State Department official death in Iraq because he was investigating their practices. That's always a nice, fun story. Also, the fun story of a employee who was forced to wear a insulting name tag. Another fun story about a former Republican presidential nominee who thinks not everyone, how not everyone was allowed to vote back in the day. Maybe that's the right way to do it. We also have a story where, what else do we got, Michael?
Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
They're experimenting on you.
Without
your permission.
Fun, wonderful stories today. They'll make you all feel better. ISIL
declares a caliphate. We got a lot of stuff. Hey.
So much fun.
Become a member.
Unbelievable.
Become a member. Become a member today at majorityreport.com/become a member. It's the way you know the deal. It's the way you sustain this show. It's the way you make it all possible. I'm not going to give you a hard sell today, but obviously
buy all your stuff through our Amazon link, majorityreportkickback.com. That way, if you can't become a member, you can help us by just buying your usual groceries or whatever you buy through Amazon. Also, you can download the app. It's absolutely free at majorityapp.com. Download it on your friends' iPhones, your friends' Android phones, if you already have it. It's the great way to turn people onto the show. Another great way is sharing our YouTube clips, because it's easier for people to digest a 5 to 6 minute video than it is for people to digest an hour and a half to 2 hour podcast when they're not already fans and regular listeners of the show. And that is youtube.com/Sam Cedar. You can call into the show at any point from this moment forward today, 646-257-3920. And you will be able to speak with Matt and Mike, share our rage in today's SCOTUS decisions. If you're a libertarian, please tell us why it is wonderful that SCOTUS has ruled these things and why it's great for religious people's freedoms, that they can take away other people's freedoms. Also, you can – I am into the show, majorityfm@jabber.org. What? How did that happen?
I have no clue.
That was really weird.
Okay,
we will...
We'll be seeing the fun half, folks.
Yep. Oh, you're playing the...
What's playing?
You're playing the live show, actually, on my computer somehow.
Oh, I don't have it open. All right, let's try it again.